The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. 11 days ago, Dane County Circuit Judge Stephen Elke sentenced Alec Cook, an expelled UW-Madison student, to 3 years in prison for sexually assaulting three female students. His sentence garnered strong reactions from state and local elected officials who said the sentence wasn't harsh enough, considering the number of women who accused Cook of and the sadistic nature of the assaults. What do you think of the Alec Cook case? The judge says his hands were tied by sentencing guidelines. Do you agree? 1-800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Pat Schneider is a reporter with the Capital Times, and she has been following this case pretty much since the beginning. Welcome to the State Capitol Report, Pat.
Yes, good morning.
So, Alec Cook, what was he initially charged with doing?
Well, the charges against Alec Cook kind of came out bit by bit and layered one on top of the other. The first victim to come forward did so in October 2016, and after news of that assault, little by little, other women came forward. Eventually, 11 women made allegations that resulted in more than 20 charges, many felonies and also some misdemeanors.
But those 20 charges, some of actual rape or sexual assault, stalking, they got pled down to just three charges, I think?
No. In February of this year, Cook pled guilty to a total of five felony charges, including three third-degree sexual assaults.
So how did that change? How did we get from 23 to 5?
Well, it was part of a plea agreement, which is a very common thing in the criminal justice system here in Dane County, Wisconsin, and throughout the country. Most criminal cases don't go to trial, and a plea agreement, which saves both the state from the expense of a trial and especially in the case of sexual crimes, the victims from the ordeal of going to court to recount what they had been put through. Often a plea agreement involves the dropping of some charges.
Interesting to me, I've read that there was some evidence that was inadmissible, that he kept pretty clear notebooks and diaries in which he said what he wanted to do to women. Why was that inadmissible?
Well, there was a key ruling in the case, a notebook which the precise contents of which have been disputed, and since it wasn't entered into evidence, it's not, absolutely clear. But Judge Elke ruled that a detective working the case had opened and read the notebook that was in a bedside table in Cook's campus area apartment without a warrant. And therefore, under kind of foundational rules of evidence, because this evidence was illegally seized without a warrant, it would not be admissible in court to be used against the defendant.
Were there other things that were found in that apartment during that search that was warrantless?
I'm not sure. That certainly was a key piece of evidence that got a lot of publicity because of remarks made by prosecutors in some of the early court appearances, hinting at the content of that notebook.
So Judge Elke, during remarks that he gave at the hearing, got emotional when talking about the victims of Cook's assault. Can you talk to me about that?
The judge actually choked up at one point. During the sentencing hearing, there was time allowed for what are referred to as victim impact statements. And I believe 7 or 9 of these from some of the women victimized and their family members had been submitted to the court before the hearing. And there was a reading from, I believe, 3 of these. And later, the judge, in his remarks to the court right before passing sentence, read excerpts from the statements by the victims. And when he spoke, when he quoted from a statement from a victim who said she felt guilty about having been a victim and that she had letting Cook take advantage of her, letting him in and close to her in order to take advantage of her, when the judge touched on those things, he got choked up and struggled to keep his composure.
And yet, the judge could have given, even with the plea, he could have given Alec Cook a maximum of 39 years, 6 months. Prosecutors were asking for 19 years, 6 months. The judge gave him 3 years and then 5 years probation. Why did he say he did that?
Well, the judge stated again and again that he anticipated this would be an unpopular sentence, but that a sentence of even what the prosecution was asking for was just out of balance with the type of sentences that are given in circumstances like this in court. He said, the judge indicated, that any prison time is an unusual in a case like this, where a defendant or an offender at that point had pled guilty and entered into a plea agreement and did not have a prior criminal record. Yet Judge Oki said that not giving a sentence in this case would depreciate the seriousness of the crimes.
So he thought that 3 years was enough to kind of placate people, perhaps?
I don't know, placate people? I don't mean to insinuate that was the purpose of his sentence, placating people. The judge indicated that he was trying to, administer the law fairly to everyone in this case.
State and local officials wrote a letter of outrage asking for a meeting. Has Elke's office said whether he would be meeting with this group?
My understanding is that there was a document filed with the court. I've seen reports on this, but have not yet seen it myself, that because the case is not absolutely concluded, the Cook and his team still have the option of appealing the sentence, that because it was open, it would be inappropriate for the judge to be meeting with anyone on it.
Interesting. So Cook, the judge seemed to give Cook room for rehabilitation. There was testimony about this. Does Cook seem to want to rehabilitate?
That was disputed. His openness to undergoing therapy for some psychological conditions that were pointed to by the defense's expert witness at sentencing. Apparently, the overall picture I stepped away with, that while resistance and in denial early on, perhaps during the period since his arrest, Cook had become at least articulated being more amenable to entering into treatment.
We are talking about the sentencing of Alec Cook. The serial rapist was given 3 years and five years probation, evoking anger from state and local officials. We're going to talk with one of those officials in a moment. Pat Schneider from the Capital Times, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about the sentencing of former UW-Madison student Alec Cook, who was accused of sexual assault, stalking, strangulation, and kidnapping of 11 women. But he pleaded to lesser charges and was sentenced to 3 years in prison and 5 years probation. Prosecutors were asking for nearly 20 years, and many political leaders were outraged by the discrepancy. What do you think of this case? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Joining us now on the State Capitol Report is Lisa Subek. She's a Democratic state representative from Madison. She was one of several state and local elected officials who penned a letter lambasting Dane County Circuit Judge Stephen Elke for his sentencing of Alec Cook. Welcome to the program, Lisa.
Thank you for having me, Carrie.
So what did you think when you heard this sentence?
You know, it felt a little bit like a gut punch when I heard the sentence. This was a case that, of course, many of us were following in the media. And it was a case that affected so many women on our UW campus here in Madison. And, you know, particularly at a moment in time where on the national level we're hearing all of these women speak out about sexual assault and thinking, wow, we're getting serious about sexual harassment and sexual assault, to then have this case where the perpetrator was somebody who was charged with over 20 crimes involving 11 women, sentenced to just 3 years in prison, which likely could very well be less than 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it felt like a real gut punch. It felt like a step backward, not only for our community and the university, but for women who are bravely stepping forward and speaking out, and in this case, reporting some really heinous crimes, to not truly get justice.
So
is
I'm interested in the definition of heinous crimes. I mean, the judge said that his hands were kind of tied. Generally, somebody in his position who has never had a prior conviction, never been arrested before, who commits a crime would get probation, would not go to jail. But he was sending him to jail for 3 years because he felt like these crimes were heinous enough. But I wonder, like, where's the line here? I mean, if somebody doesn't have any prior arrests or convictions and he murders someone, Do the priors count in that sentencing also, or is it just kind of the type of crime?
You know, this is actually happens often with sexual assault where one woman reports, and this is exactly what happened in this case. One woman came forward and reported the crime. When the media started reporting it, as other victims started coming forward, they suddenly felt empowered to come forward because they weren't alone. So, you know, I think this happens so often in sexual assault where you don't know about the prior crimes until somebody comes forward and makes a report. So you don't necessarily have that history of prior sentences, in this case, a privileged young man. And so often, it is that very privilege that sets somebody up to meet these sentencing conditions. I think it's important to remember in this case that there were a number of dismissed charges that were able to be read in. And what that means is that the judge can consider them when it comes time for sentencing. So the plea agreement allowed him to plead to only these three counts of third-degree sexual assault and then choking and stalking as well. But these other crimes could have been read in, and we've already heard from one of the victims who contacted my office and told me that her, you know, she was one of those victims whose crimes could have been read in, and Judge Elke, at least according to media reports, opted not to take into consideration those read-in charges. And I think that that's really frustrating. You know, this is indicative of a bigger systemic problem in addition to the problem in this case.
So talk to me about the bigger systemic problem.
So, you know, we see a system where men, particularly men of privilege, whether that's white men, middle-class men, oftentimes this happens on college campuses. We saw the case in Stanford, have the resources to end up with these light sentences and, you know, in some cases not sentenced at all. And, you know, I think that that's what's happening here. I think that we can all count a ton of examples of, you know, low-income African-American men being sentenced to far tougher sentences for far lesser crimes.
Mm-hmm. So what you talk about privilege here. First of all, you refer to the Stanford case. That was Brock Turner. And the judge in that case actually was recently recalled. Aaron Persky was the judge. Do you think that that may happen here?
You know, I have definitely heard that certainly on campus and in the community, there are people talking about that possibility. I don't know if that will happen. You know, the approach that we decided to take with our letter was to try to have a discussion with the judge. And we've learned from a response from the Chief Judge, William Hanrahan, that we will not be able to have that meeting. And I think that's really unfortunate because that would have been an opportunity to, one, hear from Judge Elke a little bit more about his decision, but also for us to really dive in and start looking at what are the systemic solutions that we could tackle here. You know, rape is one of the most underreported crimes. Two out of every three sexual assaults goes unreported. So how do we start to change that? How do we start to change a system in which out of every 1,000 sexual assaults, only 6 rapists are ever incarcerated?
Okay, so I want to go to Brandon, who is calling from Hudson. He speaks to this. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Your question?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that the judge was kind of left really no choice. The man that did wrong, he was very wrong in what he did. However, the women that were victimized in this situation, they gave statements, but they were not willing to testify. And without the women testifying, the man would have walked.
Interesting.
So he was given a plea deal, and he did get him in trouble, and he got something, which I'm very glad for.
Okay, so interesting. Thank you, Brandon. Lisa Subek, can you talk to that? What were the women not willing to testify? And how much of a problem is this when we are talking about sexual assault cases?
Sure, and I don't know the details in each of these cases about whether individual women were willing to testify or not. I know one of the issues that Judge Oakey raised was that this would save the woman from having to testify.
Right.
And the reality is, this is one of the reasons that sexual assault is so underreported, is that women don't want to have to drag themselves back through that crime over and over and over again. You know, when somebody says that they're burglarized, nobody says we don't believe you, right? When somebody says that somebody held them up at gunpoint, typically you don't hear we don't believe you, but you hear that again and again and again in these sexual assault cases. And I think that's one of the many ways in which our system is broken. We have to start believing women. We have to recognize the bravery that it takes to step up. Put yourself in those women's shoes.
And there are other ways that women can testify without being in a court actually facing the guy who they are accusing of assaulting them.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that as a system we need to become more supportive of. We need to figure out what additional ways can we give women or anyone who's victimized to be able to be heard and be able to receive justice. I mean, you know, for these women who were victimized here, 11 women did not receive justice in this case.
So the judge could have given him, the prosecution was asking for nearly 20 years. Judge Oakey seemed to say, hey, look, I'm giving him any jail time. That's a lot more than usual. What was the difference between what the prosecution, why the prosecution was asking, and what Oakey said his hands were tied on?
Yeah, you know, as I said, you have these other crimes that were eligible to be considered in sentencing. And I believe, and I'm not the prosecution, so I don't want to speak for them, but I believe that part of the reason that they're asking for such a steep sentence is because that's what the community expects when somebody is charged with all these crimes. And just because they're plea bargained down to this handful of charges, in this case, as part of the plea agreement, numerous other charges were eligible to be considered. And that's what I think Judge Oakey ignored.
So what is the role? I should also say that we have tried to get State Attorney General Brad Schimel on to talk about this, and they're not talking about it right now, but we hope to get them on in the future. But you're in the legislature. What is the role of the legislature in all this? What can you do to change this?
Sure. So, you know, I think this is something that we're trying to determine at this point. Our hope was to meet with Judge Oakey and have a discussion that would help lead us to some positive changes. In this case, we're not going to be able to have that meeting. So as legislators, we are regrouping to determine what exactly are those next steps. This is something that we are committed to changing. We have to end sexual assault. And that begins by eliminating these miscarriages of justice. It's time that we stop letting privileged offenders get away with it, that we start hearing women's voices, that we elevate those voices, and that we treat these crimes with the gravity with which they should be treated.
Okay, so you are a woman who is a Democratic legislator in Wisconsin. You are in the minority. How do you convince the people in the majority that this is an important issue?
You know, whenever I try to work with folks on the other side of the aisle, the first thing I do is look for common ground. And I think this is one of those issues where we probably have a lot of common ground. You know, I believe that both Democrats and Republicans are concerned about this problem. Interestingly, this is one of those areas where I agreed with the Attorney General. The Attorney General put out a release expressing his concerns about the lenient sentence. You know, he and I may or may not have the same approach to solving the problem, but we start by finding that common ground and figure out how we work together to solve this problem.
So mandatory minimums, might this be an answer, or is that a whole other can of worms?
Well, you know, I think that we need to look at what the options are. Certainly mandatory minimums have some disadvantages and don't allow some case-by-case consideration and can actually, in some ways, sometimes feed these problems. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to take a look at what our options are and, you know, how we solve the problem. I think sexual assault is a little different than other crimes in that it is so underreported, that perpetrators are so underconvicted and so underincarcerated. And, you know, we have to tackle it for the crime that it is, and we've got to change our culture.
We have been talking about the Alec Cook case. Alec was sentenced to 3 years in prison and 5 years probation, despite the prosecution asking for nearly 20 years for the serial rapist. Lisa Subek is a Democratic state representative from Madison. She was one of several state and local elected officials who criticized the Dane County judge and wrote a letter asking to meet with him. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Carrie.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.